up and running, okay?
Okay.
Hi, this is Don Cassidy with Delicious Agony Progressive Rock Radio, and I have on the phone with me from the UK acclaimed solo artist, Mr. Guy Manning. Guy, how you doing today?
I'm very well, actually. Had a pleasant weekend, so not too bad.
That's good to hear. Guy's seventh album, I think, seventh studio album, One Small Step.
Yeah, number seven.
Okay, has just been released through Prog Rock Records, which was a follow-up to the really critically acclaimed album we released last year, Matter of Life and Death, the Journal of Able Man. Guy, I guess the first question was, how would you describe, kind of, to the listener, the path that you've taken on this album, this being your seventh solo album, as compared to the last album, which was very, very well-received?
Well, I try to, you know, look at each album as a sort of unique entity anyway. I try wherever possible not to repeat myself if I possibly can. And if we look back to the seven albums, each one of them has got a different approach to the way the material's being presented, from dark and broody
Right. Concept
albums to quite pastoral, light and more poppy albums.
Right.
Last year's was a concept album.
Mm-hmm.
Based around the story, a narrative storyline, and so I was fairly faithful to the narrative that I had to convey to the listener. So I had to sort of design songs to fit the storyline, if you like.
Right.
So when I started, I had some songs which were in place already.
Okay.
I was working on a couple of other pieces which didn't actually make it to the final product and actually went elsewhere. And so I had to be constantly writing to try and meet the gaps in the story. And so that kept me on path for quite a while, trying to sort out the sort of style of that.
Right.
When I came to do this one, there were a couple of overriding sort of criteria I had in mind for it. One was that people had been asking me for some time whether I was going to play live.
Mm-hmm.
This has always been a problem, because the people I tend to use on the albums, great as they are as musicians, you can never get them to rehearse.
Right.
They're very good at popping in to do the bits I want them to do, and I write the parts out, and they come in and we chat about it, we work on them together, record them, and then they disappear again.
Right.
Getting them to come and rehearse consistently to put on a live show has been very difficult, because they're much in demand outside of the work I do.
Of course.
Having, you know, other obligations, and they make a lot more money with other people than they do with me.
Right.
So I feel guilty about taking up too much of their time. So we always work very well as a sort of extended family when we come to record the albums, and the same people, if you look back over the albums, have been helping me for some time now.
Mm-hmm.
And we're very happy to do that. But live has always been difficult. Because people were keeping asking me whether I was going to play live or not, it became fairly obvious that if I was going to do that and I couldn't hold down a steady extended lineup, then maybe I ought to think about producing something that was easier to perform, if necessary.
Right.
And so I decided that it was about time I did a long, fairly long acoustic piece, harking back to the times of probably, early Al Stewart,
mm-hmm.
Roy Harper,
mm-hmm.
that type of approach,
right,
where it's one man and his guitar plus ancillary instruments,
right,
helping out.
Right.
So it was something that I could probably perform myself, if necessary, myself and one other person probably, and we'd be able to pull it off. And because I had a head start on this, I decided to make it quite long, so we'd have to take up quite a lot of the performance without having to go back and trying to perform some of the more difficult and arranged, symphonically complex numbers,
right,
in an acoustic format. Singing songs will lend themselves very happily to being decomposed and re-engineered.
Right.
And some of them just lose completely the flavour of what they were about if you tried to play them on a more simplistic lineup.
Right. Right.
So when I played this one, it was going to be under the premise that I wanted something that I could perform fairly easily on my own if necessary, extended, quite direct and less, I suppose, poetic. In terms of the lyrical content, and more direct and hard-hitting. And so that's what I think this album's about, really. It's still got all the interesting uses of instruments and different blends of fiddles, saxophones, flutes, and all the rest of it.
Right.
But that decorates what is basically an extended song suite.
Right. And when you originally emailed me about the album, you said you compared it more to a Roy Harper album than to Yes is Close to the Edge, which I think is fair to say. The track listing, just so everybody knows, it's In Swing Time, Night Voices, No Hiding Place, The Mexico Line, and then tracks 5 through 12 are the epic One Small Step, and I think that's the piece that Guy was just talking about. It's in 8 different parts, actually. So you would think that like a song like One Small Step, because of the way you've arranged it and you've written the music on this album, will translate pretty well to a live stage without needing, this whole array of musicians that tend to pop in and out on a Manning album.
Mm. Well, we have performed it twice now live.
Right.
The long thing.
Okay.
Once with drums, once without drums.
Okay.
And it worked equally well.
Okay.
It seems to hold its own because of the melodies and the structure of the composition, really, more than anything else. And I'm pleased with the fact that it translates quite well to being deconstructed.
Right.
So the album is more ornate because I had time to be able to do that and to add more orchestration to it.
Right.
But it can be played quite simply.
Right.
Hopefully. And that's the idea, that it translates equally between the sort of higher symphonic end and the acoustic songwriter end.
Right. And people have been asking, I know, about the live question. You've received that quite a bit, I know, about when are you going to play live. So it's nice to know that some folks will be happy to hear that is happening and will happen a little bit. So that must be kind of a nice feeling for you to be able to do that.
It is very nice to play live. It's an absolute pain to be a small musician playing live, however, and especially a small musician who is trying to run a group of other musicians. Because it invariably turns out that if we're going to play somewhere, and the last couple of gigs we have played, it's been a matter of me turning up and setting everything up, and then strolling in at the last minute and saying, how are we doing for time then? which is fine, but I'm setting up 2 keyboard stacks, computers, PAs, and all the rest of it. For a small, struggling musician, it's a pain, because it still means a lot of time getting down there, loading, playing, and then loading out the back door into the van at the end of the night.
Right.
I'm afraid I'm still quite away from having the roadies do it for me. That's why traditionally I haven't played live a lot, because it's too much of a setup, 6-beat band.
I understand.
It's quite an interesting setup and gives me quite a lot of technological challenges.
Right.
I tend to pick the venues and things I'm going to do to try and do what I can when I can. But I'm hoping to play some more next year.
Absolutely.
That'd be nice.
So you played 2 dates. You played one in October and one in at the beginning of this month too, right?
Yeah, we played with Support to Focus.
Okay.
In Melbourne, and that went down very well.
Okay.
And then we played what I call a more extended set on our home turf in Leeds in the north of England.
Mm-hmm.
Where I was able to, what I did was I opened up the whole songbook from all 7 albums.
Wow.
And basically worked my way through saying, which songs can we play? And then I just wrote them out and said, right, we're going to play these numbers, and if you know it, join in, if you don't, shut up. And it was quite an interesting evening, because it was far more relaxed than trying to put on what I would call a rock show.
Right.
This was an evening of me playing songs and chatting, helped out by friends of mine who happened to drop in and play bits and pieces where they could.
Right.
So it was a different approach to the whole thing, and I think I'd like to, if possible, I'm thinking about doing maybe recording a live one of those.
Yeah, I was just thinking that a live album would be wonderful if you do something like that in that kind of setting.
Yeah, for an evening with type of album, rather than a big stadium performance type of thing, which we've traditionally tried to do in the past, try to reproduce the albums in detail. I don't think I want to do that anymore, because it's just too much like hard work, really.
Right. One of the individuals, and Guy obviously plays a tremendous amount of the instruments on the album, as he always does, and he has kind of a revolving cast of characters, that's some that have been with Guy for quite some time, but one of the folks that's playing on his album, on this particular one, is Martin Orford from IQ and from Jadis. How did Martin get involved with the project?
He got involved because I asked him.
That's a good way.
It was like this. I'd written the long piece.
Mm-hmm.
I'd written some very nice, what I thought, very nice melodic flute parts,
mm-hmm.
and had no flautist
mm-hmm.
to play them. Ian Anderson was in America. So, next, I asked Martin, because Martin had previously helped Parallel and 90 Degrees
mm-hmm.
on their Unbranded album, and
right.
done a session for them. in the past I've used Angela Goldthorpe. It's not Angela Goldthorpe anymore. Angela Gordon now.
Right.
Because she got married.
Right.
For Most of the Autumn.
Correct.
But things got tricky there with when they were signed to the Classic Rock. They weren't allowed to do a lot of sort of what I'll call session favours.
Okay.
So she did two albums and helped me out, and then when I came to do the next album, she said, I can't this time, and suggested a couple of other people, like Anne-Marie Helder from Climatica, that was.
Mm-hmm.
And they turned out to be, they were good, all these things were very good, but they were too expensive. So I had to go for cheeky, so I went to Martin, just dropped him the mail, and said, Martin, I'm looking for some flute parts, I've got no money, how about it? And quite surprisingly, he said, yeah. No, okay. So I was delighted, and I sent him down a copy of the long track and marked out in terms of minutes and seconds where I thought the flute part should be reproduced.
Right.
And he was very good. He was pretty he was faithful to the arrangement. Played the flute very, very nicely indeed.
Mm-hmm.
Recorded it beautifully.
Mm-hmm.
So my job was fairly easy. All I got was a CD back from him saying, here's your flute parts, and I just slotted them back over the top of my sample parts.
Right.
There were some occasions where I kept the sample parts in, and other parts were augmented, his flute parts with something I'd done myself. But I'm not going to tell you where they are, you can guess for yourself. So, in the main, Martin was just doing it as a favour, a very great favour, and I'll be seeing him in a couple of weeks when I go down to the Classic Rock Society again,
okay.
Like you're playing. And we'll meet up there, and I'll hand him a copy of the album at that point, and hope he's happy with the way I've translated his work into mine.
Excellent. I think one of the things, especially on the last two albums, well, it's been a lot of your albums, but the last album and then this one too, is the artwork for the Manning albums is very, very impressive. Can you talk a little bit about? I know Ed does the artwork. Can you talk a little bit about the artwork and how kind of you come up with the idea and how that kind of evolves?
Yeah, sure. Obviously, for those people who don't know, Ed Unitsky is a very talented artist. He lives in the Republic of Belarus, near Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And he first came to, I suppose, my attention via Andy Tillotson,
mm-hmm.
and via Werner Stolt,
mm-hmm.
because Ed had done film work with the Flower King.
Correct.
Andy had been impressed by the work he'd done and asked him and commissioned him to do artwork for the first Tangent album, The Music That Died Alone.
Right.
And I got in contact with Ed because when I came to do A Matter of Life and Death last year, I wanted it to be accompanied by a booklet which was able to convey in pictures what the music was trying to do in terms of its narrative storyline. And I knew Ed had the skills and imagination to be able to translate what I wanted into that visual image, if you like. And we went through it, and one of the briefs I said to him was it should look sort of like Merlian script for Jester's Tear,
right.
Type of artwork. And through a number of months of iterations of artwork passing backwards and forwards and me saying, I really like that, Ed, but would you mind taking the dancing penguin off and putting it somewhere else? And I don't see the relevance of the cash register.
Right.
Ed's wonderful with his artwork. But sometimes it can be quite wacky. When you're asking for something, and you think you've got it almost perfectly right, and you're saying, that picture is perfect, Ed, but would you mind moving the candlestick a bit to the left?
Right.
And back it comes with the candlestick perfectly in place, and a floating harpsichord on the left-hand side that hadn't been there before. And so you've got to make it, our working relationship is quite amusing, and we get on very well. The other thing is, of course, he doesn't speak English particularly well.
Right.
And so translating some of his emails has been quite a challenge.
Right.
But he's a superb artist, there's no doubt about it, and he's got the imagination to work in a variety of different styles. And so when I was talking about what I wanted, he was able to put that into paint,
mm-hmm.
pretty easily.
Right.
Now, when we came to the new one, when I started to think about doing the new album, I had absolutely not an idea in my head for what I was going to write anything about. The problem is, I'm not really, I'm not starving in a small flat in Paris. I'm just an ordinary guy who goes out to work to a fairly middle class job, really.
Right.
So that when I come down to sit and ponder to what can I tell the world about my existence, there isn't much that comes to mind which anybody would really want to know about. And so I was stumped this time. I didn't want to do another concept album. I just wanted to write some pieces, and I had no idea what to do. So I had an idea. I said to Ed, "Ed, just draw me some artwork and send it over. It doesn't matter what it is. Just send me some pictures. And if I find any pictures that I think sort of give me an idea for a song, then we're off and running."
Right.
So this was going to be a bit like pictures at an exhibition, but, you know,
right,
my style.
Right.
And so these pictures started arriving, and some of them, you know, I've still got, they make me laugh even more. But some of them are quite peculiar, absolutely peculiar, and some of them were just stunning, you know, really stunning.
Right.
And the one that, I suppose, that sparked off the most of the idea was he got this idea for this man standing looking out from what looked like the edge of a planet into right. the universe.
Right.
And I thought, that was like interesting. Picture. And of course you start thinking about it, then you think, well, you know, what's he looking at? What's he actually doing standing there?
Mm-hmm.
So I said, well, the guy's probably wondering where to go.
Right.
And from that came the idea, well, if he's wondering where to go, maybe he's going on holiday.
Right.
You know, so I had Ed dress him in a Bermuda shirt and shorts.
Right.
And put a suitcase. And arriving with a suitcase came a little white dog for some reason, but that was nice, so we kept that.
Right.
And so, okay, so this guy is looking into the cosmos, he's standing on the edge of the world, he's looking into the cosmos, he's dressed up and he's ready to go on holiday.
Mm-hmm.
So what's it about? So from that, the whole premise of the idea of man going off exploring space, you know, and paying money to go around the moon and all the rest of it, which is utterly ridiculous when he can't even sort out his own problems here on Earth.
Right.
And he decides he wants to go off and, you know, meet everybody else and tell them how wonderful we are. We can't even get our own act together.
Right.
This became the basis for One Small Step. And so this artwork evolved, really, around that idea. And that arrived, a picture of a park bench with some children's toys on it and some barbed wire hanging in the background set me thinking about other things, and No Hiding Place, the track about childhood and the battling children and all the problems in the world and physical and the mental torture of children, all that popped into my head. And so I started thinking about writing a song for children.
Right.
That was that one.
Right.
Somebody started telling me a story about how they had a dream just after their wife had died. They met them and they were able to talk things through with them in the middle of this wood at midnight. And that got me thinking about something else, and so night voices came from all that. And basically all this artwork and these ideas sort of gelled into the album,
right.
really. So in some ways Ed was responsible for starting the thought process behind a lot of this stuff this
right.
time.
Right.
And so he's actually more important than just the artist. He
right.
was actually conceptual advisor.
Yeah, and again, the artwork throughout the whole booklet, not just the covers, I'm just going through it right now, is stunning, as you were describing each song. When you sit down and write this music, a song like Night Voices, which is one of my favorite songs on it, actually, do you tend to get the lyrical idea first? Do you tend to get the music first, or does it kind of vary when you sit down and write your music?
It definitely varies. I mean, with Night Voices, I had the story. I had the conversation with
right.
With my friend, and he was telling me this, and I thought, well, you know, I'll write you a song for this.
Right.
This is something I can write a song about for
right.
you. And we were able to do that. And so really all I had to do was find the right musical setting for what was is a fairly straightforward folk song.
Right.
Really.
Right.
But it's got a bit of arrangement peculiarity about it, because I didn't want it to turn into an orchestrated Tom Paxton number.
Right.
So it became a sort of hybrid of little bits and bits to make it slightly more interesting and a bit more quirky.
Right.
But in essence, it's a very simple song, and that came from the idea. So the lyrical content was, I knew what I wanted to have to, how, you know, what I was going to try and write about.
Right.
I just another translating that into something where I thought that the melody lines and music put it across.
Right.
With something like One Small Step, it's the whole, you know, being eight parts and, interlinked and thematic and all the rest of it takes a bit more time and effort. And some of that came from the music first and me basically writing it section by section, knowing roughly the concepts and ideas I wanted to say. Right. You know, if you look at each section, sort of deals with a different part of our own inherent problems, I think.
Right.
And so I just basically gelled the ideas of the lyric and the music together. And sometimes, you know, sometimes the lyrics came first and the music came second.
Right.
And Mexico Line, which is far more and an easy, fairly easy digestible number, basically came from the idea of the music first, and once I got the song title, everything else fell into place. I wrote that basically, I wrote the song title first, and then wrote the lyrics about what, you know, why it was in Mexico, you know, basically.
Right. Right.
So it does depend. It depends on what I'm playing at the time. You know, I can be playing guitar, I can be playing the keyboards.
Right.
Messing around with rhythm samples,
right.
Anything that just sort of sparks an idea off,
right.
I'll basically note it down, store it somewhere on the hard drive, and then, you know, either develop it or let it fall by the wayside as natural wastage, really. So.
Right. I think Guy's been described in a lot of places as really a storyteller, which I think is very true. Again, since this is your seventh release, how do you think your music writing style and your composition style and just basically your music in general has evolved since you first started with release number one to where you are right now?
Well, that's quite a tricky question.
A very tricky question.
Quite tricky. I mean, as I said at the beginning, I think that each album has its own flavour. Obviously, album number one was fairly easy in some ways because it was the first one I did, and therefore I had the pick of all the songs I'd ever written, you know, since I was six. First albums usually are, but, you know, should be in theory brimming with all your best material.
Right.
You have years and years to be able to hone it down,
right.
And throw all the crap and keep all the good stuff. I'm not saying that turned out on my album to be the case, but that should have been what happened. And it turned out to be a series of songs that I really liked, all put together and just happened to be recorded at that time. So there was no particular concept or anything behind the idea of the first album.
Right.
Other than the artwork and me having had that album title,
right.
Four Stories for Small Children, had been in my head since probably I was at secondary school,
right.
Which is when I was about 15. I decided that I was going to call my first album that, and that's been with me ever since. So some years later, when it actually became an album, I had that idea of calling it 12 Stories for Small Children still, and therefore the artwork was done by my kids. And to illustrate that, you know, the whole album packaging was now done in the style of kids, with kids drawing all over it. And that was just a conceit to hold the songs together. There was no real underlying idea of what that was going to be, other than I had a bunch of songs which I'd liked, and I had, you know, had in my toolbox of songs for some time. When I came to do the second one, that was a whole different matter altogether. Now, having got an album out, which I never thought I would,
yeah.
I was going to do something completely different.
Right.
And so I went to do The Cure, which is quite a dark and brooding concept album, quite a dark album. And had the idea for the storyline, and everything came from that. It's quite obscure what that's about.
Right.
But it's a lot darker than the first one. So when I came to album three, as an absolute, you know, a immediate reaction to having spent a lot of time in depression with the second album, dealing with mental asylums and all the rest of it,
right.
I went to the album and decided this was going to be much lighter and more pastoral, you know, sections of just little flutes and cellos doing things and interesting songs and nice little twisty songs and bits of pop music in there, you know, making much more upmarket and bubbly,
right.
Which I did. So then I came to do the next one, and then I got an idea it was all about the sea and various parts of the sea. And, you know, each album just basically is what happens at the time.
Right.
I don't think I've got a master plan,
right.
Really. Consequently, I sort of chicane from one album to another, basically looking for something that will be interesting for me to do.
Right.
If it's interesting for me to do, I hope that sort of marinades into the pieces.
Right.
And makes it interesting for people to listen to, because I think a lot of the time when you pick up one of my albums, you don't know what it's going to be like. You know, it's not as prescriptive,
right.
As some albums can be, where, you know, you buy an album, you're going to get another album which is great songs but more of the same.
Right, right.
And I try to do not more of the same and try to do something different.
Right.
However, now I've been seven, I'm sort of running out of ideas of where I can go. You know, I think the next one is basically going to be two kazoos and a marimba. But I'm not sure where... I'm not sure what to do about it. I haven't really got any ideas for another one yet, so
right.
I don't have to worry too much.
Not yet. One of the things, the Tangent's coming out with their third studio album in the new year, Place in the Queue, and you're involved in the Tangent also, I know.
Yeah.
And I see you have, I'm just looking at the Tangent website, and you have a writing credit on the Tangent album. Could you talk a little bit about your involvement in that album and what you kind of think the fans might expect? Or is it a little too early to say that?
Well, I'll tell you a little bit about it. I think you'll have to go to the horse's mouth, Mr. Andy Tillett, to get the definitive view about the Tangent.
Right.
I don't tend to talk too much about it because really it's Andy's project. I can tell you that this time it seems to have been a far more cooperative kind of arrangement. Everybody's had a hand in sort of vetting it and listening to it and critiquing it and holding it down. We were obviously invited to be able to put sections and ideas into the pot, hence the joint writing credits. Myself and Andy, Theo Travis, and Andy, and I know everybody in the band has put in various bits and pieces into it. From my own perspective, I believe this to be the best album that Tangent has produced.
Wow.
I think this one is absolutely brimming with superb melodies, and really. It's been a joy to work on this time. I flew out to France last summer to work with Andy in his studio in the south of France and put down pretty much all of the acoustic guitar parts there and most of the backing vocals that I produced. I think I'm more visible on this album than I have been on the last two.
Okay.
I had a lot of more involvement in it and helping it through its, to its early stages and into its final implementation and final development.
Right.
But everybody's had a hand in it. And of course, the band has also been bolstered, the live unit part of it has been bolstered by having done a successful European and American date. So they're feeling, they're feeling confident and having worked together, to get that set together, they feel confident about the music they are producing.
Right.
So it's got a sort of confidence about it, I think, this time, which is saying, rather than saying, this is the Tangent and we hope you like it, this is more of an album that says, this is the Tangent, this is what we do. I'm sort of a, my part in it is tricky because I'm not part of the live, the live unit.
Right.
But I think I am important nevertheless in the final product. There's a lot of me in this one. As I say, I think it's going to be brilliant. I think it's a great album. There's so much material it's spilled out onto. It was going to be a double, now it's a long single, but this is a bonus. I think it's going to be really good. I hope people will really find in it what I think, all of us who've worked on it think it could be. We think it's great as an album. But of course, Rona's not on this one, so some people might find. Might have only built the early Tangent album because of Rona's involvement. I hope that's not the case, because I think as a piece of work it stands, equally alongside the other two where Rona was involved, and in some cases it's probably better from a material point of view and compositional point of view.
Right.
So I think it's going to be a spinner, but I'm bound to say that, aren't I?
Maybe, but we'll definitely be talking to Andy as we get closer to the release. But I think Andy's kind of feeling my conversations with him too is again the Tangent in Roina was in so many different projects, and being the brilliant musician that he is, that it kind of feels a little bit more like a band right now. Roina has stepped away and is doing his own, Flower Kings, and his own solo album that just came out.
Yeah.
But there's no hard feelings in any way. But it's just there's always so much time you can contribute to so many different things, I think. So
I think it was absolutely important. Roina was exactly the right person, exactly the right time to help Andy and all of us create Tangent 1 and 2. And I think as you say, as a matter of course, things change. But the Tangent is now far more of a living band
right.
and the virtual project that we started out as.
Right.
Even though the recording is still geographically challenged. You know, I mean, the thing is, we've never all been in the same room.
Right.
We, you know, it might sound like it's a joint composition, but we've all turned up at different times. We've all sent things. I sent parts by email, you know, to be included.
Right.
And I think it's a tribute to modern technology that an album like this can be made these days. And I think it's... I think it's
going to
be a good album.
Yeah, I would agree with that. What you just said, because it amazes me. I know the Tangiers never all been in the same room at the same time while recording an album, and some of these other great projects too. And it just amazes me that, you know, again, 20 years ago, obviously this wouldn't have been possible.
Yeah.
So great music like the Tangent can be done with modern technology, even though you guys are all over the place.
It's well organized, and Andy's done a remarkable job of organizing both. Really, as a group,
right.
a group of musicians,
right.
you know, and from not just from the point of view of getting us all together to do the thing,
mm-hmm.
but to get us all together to actually construct the album and to critically review it,
right.
to be able to take all these different viewpoints from the musicians involved, ancillary people that are in the sort of like the inner sanctum of the Tangent project that get relied upon for feedback,
right.
get these people in. Take all that criticism on board
right.
and constructively, you know, deal with it and make the product better
right.
as a result of it. Takes an awful amount of time and care. And I think that's where Andy scores.
Right.
He's able to be able to use all these people that want to help in a very constructive way.
Right.
And I think, you know, it's quite a daunting task having, you know, six quite outspoken musicians. You know, standing around the outside going, but what about me then? within in the middle, and all the viewpoints of the way the album could sound, and should it sound like this, and should it be a progression on the last one, and all the rest of all the other questions that hang over any type of release.
Right.
Where does it sit in relation to the last one?
Right.
So Andy's done a remarkable job on this one. Apart from that, he actually composed most of the material as well, you know, bless him. So, you know, he's done a good job this time, and we're all very proud of him, really.
Absolutely. That would definitely do that. Guy, I asked us sometimes, in between the recording of your own music and everything else that you do, is there any music you've been listening to recently that's been kind of in your CD player when you're not working on your own music that you've been impressed with?
New stuff, not really. I mean, I've got the new Kate Bush album.
Okay.
As is everybody else, I should think.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what I make of that. I'm not quite sure. I think it's the critically acclaimed thing that everybody is saying it is.
Mm-hmm.
To me, I think Hounds of Love is still the winner. The album I'd pull off the shelf if I was going to go for Kate Bush. I think there are some beautiful moments on it, but I'm not sure it's the critically acclaimed album that I'm reading about.
Right.
In pretty much every magazine.
Right.
But that's just my own perspective, really. That's only my own viewpoint.
Right.
I still think it's a great album.
Right.
I'm a little bit more reserved about it.
Right.
The 12-year gap would, you know,
right.
would tend to make people jump up and take notice of those.
Right.
In terms of other new bands, no, not really. I haven't heard a lot. I've got things to listen to. I mean, I've got Rainer's new album, which I haven't heard yet,
mm-hmm.
but I've heard very good things about.
Mm-hmm.
I've had to put things away on the shelf while I've been dealing with all of my stuff to do. So I've got all that to come out this month. We went to Christmas when I tend to do very little Bath and Relax. I think we had to dig out the new album. But
right.
I've got new one. I've got the new Salem Hill
mm-hmm. yeah.
To listen to. I've got Magic Pie to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't listened to any of these yet.
Mm-hmm.
All I've been doing really is I have been listening to some re-releases, like I've caught up with the Gentle Giant remaster.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the, you know, remaster like John Martin.
Mm-hmm.
But mainly I've just been digging out my old favourites. I've been putting on the Rare Harpers and the Al Stewart albums again. You know,
sure.
Basically just having a listen to how the people who do that sort of stuff well do it, you know.
Right.
See if I can grab any pointers.
I'd be interested to hear what you think of the new Salem Hill. I like it a lot. That's on Prague Rock too.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
It's got some very good press.
Yeah, it's got four long pieces, and O'Neill Morse is on it on one track. They've really took a really step forward with this one, in my opinion. So.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing all of these things. Because I've sort of been waiting. It's like waiting for the new Harry Potter film. You know?
Right.
You read the book, you read the review, and then you want to go and see the film.
Right.
And now I've read the reviews. I obviously realize these are works of quite some import.
Okay.
I've got them ready to go, and I just haven't had the time. So I'm going to, basically bathe in these things for the next month. And maybe when I come out the other side, I might decide what I'm going to do next.
Right. Can you do a couple of, I have a one station ID from you from a while ago, but can you do a couple of station IDs for us?
What would you like me to say?
We'll do two. We'll do, this is Guy Manning, and you're listening to Delicious Agony Progressive Rock Radio.
Okay.
Whenever you're ready.
Hi, this is Guy Manning in the UK, and you're listening to Delicious Agony Progressive Radio.
Okay, excellent. And let's do one more, except why don't you add Guy Manning of the Tangent, since we're
the Tangent.
We'll do that one too. Mm-hmm. Whenever you're ready.
Well, I hope this is licensed to Andy, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Copyright Andy too.
Andy's a great guy.
Okay, fair enough. Hi, this is Guy Manning of the Tangent, and you're listening to Delicious Agony Progressive Radio.
Outstanding. Speaking to Guy Manning today, and the album is One Small Step on Prog Rock Records. And we should mention your website, too, www.guymanning.com.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything you want to say about your website? It's a great site. You can get all your releases there, right?
It's as informative as I can make it, really.
Right.
It's got a page for all the albums. It's got all the lyrics up there. There's also a page you can download a free sampler, a six-track sampler you can download, including all the artwork. You can print off and make your own CD.
The artwork's amazing.
So, yeah, it's a freebie album if you happen to want to hear what I sound like and don't want to fork out the money, like everybody else.
Fork out the money, it's worth it.
Yeah, well, you know, if you want to hear it for nothing, like a lot of people do,
right?
There's a six-track download sampler on the site. You can download, listen to the tracks, and see what you think.
Okay.
And then go and buy the albums, of course.
Absolutely.
Keep me going.
Support Guy. He's a amazing musician that's making great music, so it's important that we support him. So, Guy, we're going to play this. I'll go off the air now. We're going to play this next week, like I said. Are you going to try to stop by the chat?
Yeah, I mean, make sure I've got the time.
All right, it's my time at 1, and which would be your time. It's actually the same time now. It would be 6 o'clock your time, I guess.
So 6 o'clock on the 26th.
That's Saturday. Is that the
26th? Yeah, I've got it in the diary.
Yeah, I've advertised it with, we do a Yes thing here that's pretty huge, and I haven't done a Saturday show in a while. So I've advertised them together, and it's a good way to get people in and get them to hear new music sometimes. So you open up the Yes fans to some new music. It's a pretty good idea, so that's why I have them going back-to-back. So I think
it'll all be available here, and I'll just go to the site and go into the chat room.
Yeah, go to the site, yeah, and hopefully it should be fine.
Right.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks, Guy.
No problem.
Appreciate the time, and I'm sure we'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
All right. Take care.
See you then.
Bye-bye.
Bye.